Okay. You know, I've had this opportunity since I got here to, well, first off, they moved me. I had it all prepared what I was going to say for my first topic, and they said, can you change it? I'm like, oh. But good thing is we do recover, and that was one of my favorite, most favorite readings when I came in here, because it's real positive. Gives me an image of hope. So when I heard, you know, this has been read at every meeting, and I was just kind of reflecting on just, you know, the fact that we do recover, where I've been, where I'm going. It's all really hopeful. You know, I thought I could get up here and just say, did everybody see the clean time countdown? And if you all said yes, I'd be like, okay, we do recover. I'm done. I'm not the most, I hate speaking. I do. But I do have experience, strength, and hope. And that was what I was taught to give when I am asked to speak. And I do it with gratitude. I'd like to thank the, Unity Retreat for asking me to do this. It is an honor. Around this time of year, thank you. Around this time of year, I have this, it's kind of like a time of reflection for me. My clean date is November 18th, 2003. And probably about this time, in August of 2003, was kind of like the beginning of the end for me. My birthday falls on the 30th of August. So between like the 30th and November, I just remember it being like a real, real bittersweet time. I remember throwing a birthday party for myself in 2003, mostly because I just didn't want to be alone, you know, because I was not comfortable in my own skin. And so I invited my using friends, but I also invited some of my other friends that I knew would get me good birthday presents. You know, and the whole time, I'm at this party. I always try to play two people because, like, nobody could tell I was an addict, you know. So while my using friends were in my bedroom getting high and my x-ray vision is looking into the bedroom and just, like, staring at them, you know, I had to, and all the normal friends who were there to give me good presents were like, well, where is everybody? Where is this person, that person? I'm like, I don't know, you know. You know, it was just that obsession compulsion. Like the text talks about that of our obsession compulsion. You know, I was obsessed over that drug because I knew either my drug of choice or another substitution of it, which really I didn't really have a drug of choice. It was anything you got. My friends and I had a bottle of emergency gin that we kept on my refrigerator. So if we couldn't find anything else, there at least was that gin on top of the refrigerator. You know, like I zoned in on the fact that I needed to feel better, but I couldn't because I was trying to be a person that I wasn't. You know, I was trying to fool you know, family members and other people that I had it together, you know, I wasn't thinking about, you know, the people in that bedroom. You know, so shortly after my birthday, I lost power to my house because, I don't know, Allegheny Power wants you to pay their electric, bill, and I didn't. So, you know, I'm sitting in the dark one night, you know, could have paid the electric bill, but I decided to use instead. And, you know, and I had that moment of clarity in September that maybe it's the drugs I have a problem with, you know, and this is the thing, the text talks about how, you know, we seek recovery, us addicts, we seek it. You know, I sought it all the time. The text says that in the We Do Recover that most other Narcotics Anonymous is the only method of recovering from addiction where we're not isolating ourselves, you know, and that's what I would do. Like, if I was trying to get clean, I was cutting myself off from the world. You know, that was the only, and holding on to anything I could just to stay clean. So, you know, I tried to, I knew I had the problem back in September, but it took me another 2 months to realize that alcohol is a drug. Marijuana is not just an herb. I still say, damn that half-baked movie, because the beginning line was, I don't do drugs, just weed, and that was me. I never did the drug of choice ever again, but I didn't want to see the fact that those were substitutions, and that I was obsessing and compulsing over them just as much. And when I finally put down the drug, I finally put down everything, and I still was apprehensive of this program. I resisted it, because, well, one, I wasn't very spiritually fit. You know, I didn't have that open-mindedness, and if people would say that, 3 years later I'd be standing up at an NA unity retreat, I think they were nuts. I sat in the back for the first year and a half of my recovery and thinking you all were brainwashed. But the point was I kept coming back. The beginning of the reading we do recover says when at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without the use of drugs. What is there left to do? That text says somewhere in it somewhere, I'm not the best quoter, we became animalistic in our addiction. And at the end, that's what it was. I was not human. I was still human to a point. I wasn't a complete monster. But there were definitely things that I did that weren't human. When I got angry, I thought it was normal to go scratch somebody's eyes out, or try to at least. I thought it was normal to, I thought it was normal to black out when I'm drinking. I thought everybody did that. I thought it was normal to just completely obsess over my boyfriend, and I wanted to know what he was doing at all times. And if he didn't check in with me, then there was something wrong. All these things, I wasn't human over it. I didn't eat. There was never anything in my refrigerator. My family members would always, well, one of them, would always come over and get on me about no food in the house and stuff, and I'd be like, I can't afford it. We all know where we've been. I don't have to go into it because that's not the hope. The hope is that Narcotics Anonymous can make us change. They can change, our thoughts, our ideas, and just our reactions change. And like I said, it didn't happen at first. I tried every other method to get clean, because for some reason it was just I didn't buy into this at first. But like our reading says, why are we why are we here? None of these methods were sufficient for us. I laugh because in early recovery, when I actually started going to meetings and stuff like that, I took my home group's reading of Why Are We Here and crossed out the word was. None of these methods was sufficient enough because it was like, that's not even grammatically correct. It should be were. And I actually crossed out was and put were on there. And people just like, I had some people that were very offended. And I was really offended that they were offended because that was me. I was just a control freak. I was another part of my addiction was that I needed to control everything. And not saying I don't try to do it now. I still have issues where I'm trying to hold on to control, but that's kind of where the surrender comes in. And that is definitely something that I've changed. I got fired from a job because I got so angry at her, let's just put it this way. The manager had to carry me out because that's how angry I was. He was worried I was going to kill this woman. I've learned to look at my part. I've changed my attitude, even towards this woman. You know, I was able to make a 9-step amends to her recently. You know, and you know, Narcotics Anonymous has helped me change my attitude even towards her. I still think she's a little crazy, but that has nothing to do with me. Today, I know that my reaction, I don't have to react to people like that. And, you know, it's great because I have the experience to do this all over again. There's somebody at work now that, you know, people don't get along with her. She's kind of strange, you know, but through this program, I have learned to change my reactions towards her, you know. Instead of trying to change her and trying to, and getting all bent out of shape, you know, I pray for her. And, you know, and the weird thing about this is, like, when we pray for people, it's not because we want them to get hit by a train. It's so that we can change our reactions towards them. And when I see her, I actually love her. Like, I don't know where I got to the point where she walked in the door and I'm like, oh, I don't know how it went from I can't stand working with her, if someone doesn't get her away from me, I'm going to kill her, to, oh, you know, I don't, you know, it's only through this program and being able to change my attitude and reactions and thoughts. You know, I still have some messed up thinking. That's why I'm here. You know, if it was just because of the drugs, someone said this, you know, this morning, if it was just because of the drugs, you know, I'd have this feet. I wouldn't have to be here. You know, it's everything else about me that I have to change, you know. We do recover, you know. There are so many, you know, the miracle of this program, the text says that, is when we can change our personality and you know, be productive members of society. You know, I can react differently to the coworker that's getting on my nerves. You know, I can react to some, you know, a person in my support group that isn't taking my suggestions. like I said, I still struggle with it, but today at least I get to the point where I'm realizing I'm getting that way, and I can, you know, change where, you know, I always have the ability to change things now. You know, my sponsor gave me a tool a couple years ago when I was having a really bad day. I was on my way to area service, and everything was going wrong for me. It was like a country song, you know, like my cat ran away. I dropped my phone in the snow, and then it started calling this person I didn't really like. It just randomly, because the snow got in the buttons, and it was calling. And it was just, I lost the money to, I was the GSR, I lost the money to purchase our literature, and then was really mad when I found it after they closed everything down and said, you can't get it till next month. You know, I think I spilled coffee in my purse that day, too, yeah. Still coffee in my purse. So I was just, and I'm just walking around going, I'm having such a bad day. You know, and we're driving home, and my sponsor looks at me and goes, are you having a bad day, Becca? And I just, like, give him this dirty look. I'm like, yes. And she just looked at me and said, I suggest you start your day over. And I was like, oh, how the hell am I supposed to do that? You know, and she's like, you just do it. Just go in there, say the serenity prayer, and just come back out and say good morning to me. And I'm like, you're nuts. But you know what? I tried it because this program has taught me that a new idea does not get grafted on a closed mind. If I'm not willing to at least take any suggestions, I'm not going to be open to anything. I'm not going to change anything about me. So I decided to do it. And it's a wonderful tool. I got to use it yesterday. I started off the day... I went to go get gas. My card declined because they didn't put my direct deposit in, so I had to dip in the savings to get the gas. I was late getting to where I was supposed to meet my parties, and then it took me 4 hours to get here. I only live an hour away, and, you know, because we had, it was like we were going convenience store hopping. Every store we had to stop in, and I don't know why, to check to see whose coffee is better. I don't know. We went grocery shopping, which was understandable. I don't know why we didn't do that beforehand, but I'm powerless over that. And, you know, and we My sunglasses broke too. That was just, and you know, so they're squinting, stopping at every U-Haul. We stopped at a U-Haul, and yeah, I mean, I was just there, like, I was like, we're never getting there. We're never getting there. I have no money, and we're never getting there. I'm going to run out of gas before we get there, and I'm not going to be able to even put more gas in the car because my direct deposit. I mean, I'm just flipping out. You know, we left the grocery store, and I'm thinking, finally, the person, one of my people said, we're only 20 minutes away, and I'm like, oh, thank God. As soon as we pull out of the parking lot, we pull in the Sunoco. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? I'm like, are we ever getting there? You know, and they were like, we need cigarettes. I'm like, couldn't you have bought them at the grocery store? Like, I mean, I was just like, you know, and one of my other friends was like, you know, try to have a good day. And I'm like, I'm really trying. Really am. You know, the drive, I was noticing the drive as we were going out over the mountains, you know, the last bit stretch, going past the big lake and everything, and it was just like, wow, it's such a beautiful day, such a beautiful day to be clean, you know, I can enjoy this, you know, and all of a sudden it was like a light bulb. I was like, you know what, I do need to start my day over, because if I'm getting jammed up over something silly, you know, what's going to happen if something big comes along, you know, money is just money. Sunglasses, you can buy like a $5 pair at Walmart, it's okay, you know, just all this stuff. I start my day over, and, you know, it was better, and that's definitely a change in my reaction. Before my active addiction, that would have ruined my month. I'm not kidding you, it would have ruined my month. I would have been, and honest to goodness though, I mean, even though I did start my day over, I have complained about this 4-hour drive to everybody I see, because I still can't believe it, you know, so it's still a work in progress. Like, I still, you know, I still have to work at changing my reactions, and hopefully tomorrow when I leave it'll only take me, oh shit, no it won't. I'm not going home, so it's going to take me 3 hours to get where we're going. So, but at least it's supposed to take me 3 hours to get there. I'm going on a tangent. I'm sorry. Anyway, it is about changing my reactions, though. I'm getting better at it, but I'm still sick, and that's why I keep coming to these meetings. You know, this is a simple program, like just that simple tool of starting my day over. Sounds so silly, but it's just, it works. You know, and I was at work one day with a coworker. We were having just a horrible day, and she was like, I'm going, it's like 8 o'clock in the morning. She's like, I'm going to the bar after work. And I'm like, dude, it's 2 hours into your shift. It's going to get better. No, it's not. I'm like, you can start your day over. And she's like, and she just looks at me like, how am I supposed to do that? And I'm like, go in the bathroom and say the serenity prayer. It always works for me, you know, and they just, they think I'm nuts there. I'm so joyous though. Like I love being silly. Like that's so much part of my recovery. You know, I love just, you know, the one day I'm at work and I said, did anyone ever have the just desire to do a cartwheel in the hallway? And they were just like, no. I'm like, well, let's do it. You know, like, I don't know. It might be just the fact that I refuse to grow up. I don't know. Anyway, back to the simplicity of this whole thing. You know, it's set aside for us. You know, it's so easy. If I take suggestions that my sponsor given, you know what, through the years, I've come to believe in my sponsor. One, because you believe in me to take time to give me some assignments that originally I would find stupid. Like the one day I was complaining because I was really busy, and she's like, I suggest you sit down and write a time efficiency list. I'm like, I don't have time to write a time efficiency list. If I did that, then, you know. But then I realized, I'm like, you know, if I would watch me walk around in a day and see how I was spending my time, like, I might be able to relieve some of the craziness that I'm going through. Like, you know what I just thought of? How many times have I said like? my friend said, watch your likes, your knows, and your ums. So now I'm going to be thinking of that. Thank you. progress, not perfection. Anyway, it's very simple, and I found it because of the God of my understanding. I found this program because of it. I can't figure out any other way how I came to this program, started believing in it, started working in it, and, you know, changed, you know, did a complete 180. You know, for years I had tried the church. My mother, she's a pastor. I work in an old folks home. One of my residents said the other day, she's like, I know you, she's joking, she doesn't know the half of it. She says, I know you pastor's kids are terrible. And I'm like, well, I said, the good thing is I was bad when she wasn't a pastor. So, I had concept of God, you know, in my whole life and through my whole life. And you know what, to be honest with you, and you know, people in my we know, you know, I had issues with some home life and stuff like that, like we all do. Like, today I don't have to say I was abused and this happened and that happened, because it happened to all of us, you know. Today, and because of this program, I'm sorry I'm going all over. I'm just thinking of random things. Probably because I was, like, obsessing about this all day. And so I was like, I'm going to say this and this and this and that. So I apologize if I'm all over the place. But anyway, that's another thing, way that my reactions have changed, is that, you know, that home life, you know, once I did step work, you know, solutions in the steps, in case nobody knew that, I was able to let go of all of that, all of it. You know, I can look at the people in my life that wronged me, that I had resentments for. You know, those resentments were killing me slowly. I can look at them and say, I love them today. I can look at them and say, I'm sorry for the part I played. You know, I'm sorry I was such a brat. You know, I'm sorry I didn't look at what was going on in your life. You know, I can say all that today. Like, that's a tremendous gift to have. That in itself, like, makes me recover. Like, the fact that I can get rid of all that stuff through step work. And it's simple. Like, especially because, I don't know if I'm lazy, but I really like it, is the step working guide, because it's right there. All I have to do is answer questions. It's like having 10,000 sponsors at my fingertips. Like, you know, people just got together and wrote these questions that I can look at them and go, okay, that's me. Because, you know, when I walked in, I wasn't an addict, because I never shot a needle in my arm. I could do the weekend warrior thing. Like, I didn't have to use every single day. Well, the last 6 months, yes. But prior to that, I didn't have to. You know, stuff like that. Like, so I wasn't an addict. But when I got to questions like, how is my addiction manifesting today? And this was shortly after I flipped out on this woman, you know, and got fired over it. You know, I could say that I was acting out on anger, because I was obsessive and compulsive about it. Simple stuff that I was like, I am an addict. Or the fact that, it's all areas of my life, current manifestation. I was a receptionist at the old folks' home for a while. And I don't know why, but I don't know if it's because I'm chubby, but someone put a box of donuts right in front of me. And I'm trying to work these 12 steps in every aspect of my recovery. And I'm there, like, ready to call my sponsor and be like, there's donuts sitting in front of me. What do I do? Like, I tried to call. Like, I'm getting on the walkie to all the nurses' aides. I'm like, someone please come and get these donuts. Give them to the residents. I don't care what, but please get, you know, like, I was, like, desperate. But I didn't want to throw them away because that would waste them. You know, like, I don't know if that's an addict tendency or if it's because I'm a hippie. I don't know. So it's simple. It really is. And like I said, it was only, like, the God of my understanding that brought me to these rooms. I started going to a church because my mom used to bribe me. She'd be like, I'll make you dinner if you come to church. And I'm like, all right, you know, because I didn't have stuff in my refrigerator. And while I was there, the pastor of that church was a recovering addict. And he would say things like, he would tell me the concept of halt. And I'd be like, wow, that is so amazing. You know, and he would tell me all these recovery-based things that I was like, wow. You know, like, it was, you know, like, it was so profound. And when I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, into the meetings to actually give it a chance, and I heard this stuff, I'm like, he didn't make that up, you know. You know, it was just amazing how God put that pastor in my life. You know, and I still had a major chip on my shoulder about what, you know, this is a spiritual, not religious program. I had a chip on my shoulder about that religion, you know. Like, I went to a Christian college, and you know, and damn it, they judged me because they thought I was a druggie. I was. They just never saw it, so I was mad because they never actually saw me pick up the hit and smoke it, or you know, or drink myself silly or whatever. They just assumed, and I hated that. I hated that they assumed it. You know, I don't know what. Yeah, how our thinking gets all jumbled up like that. Like, it was obvious to the world, it just wasn't to me that I was an addict. In fact, I remember we had this little gazebo that was the only place we were allowed to smoke on this Christian campus, and it was seriously, no kidding, if there was a strong wind, it would have fallen off the mountain. That was how much they thought of us smokers. And the boys in the dorm that was next to this gazebo used to like to put stuff on the train tracks and videotape the train hitting it. It was a big event. We'd all go out and watch. And I just remember I was watching this tape, and someone actually put it over to us smokers. You know, we were smokers. And they were like, look, there's the druggies. And I was just like, I was so mad. Like, how dare they call me a druggie? I'm going to do something, you know. I'm going to show them. I'm going to drop out of school for directional issues. You know, like, I'm thinking, anyway, so, like I said, sufficient to say I had a chip on my shoulder about religion. It just wasn't the Christian college. It was the church I went to that, you know, people who talked to me since I was a little tyke stopped talking to me because they saw a tattoo that I got. You know, stuff like that, or whatever. So, you know, this God thing scared me. But what I've learned from this program is that I can make God whatever I need it to be. And believe me, at first it was just you people. Like, you people were, you know, were the power greater than myself. You know, and then for a while it was Aerosmith. I still think God looks like Steven Tyler, but anyway, but the cool thing is, like, I can make God whatever I need it to be, need him to be, him, her, I'm not really sure. I don't know what God is most of the time. I know what God isn't. I know God does not want me to die from this disease. I know that God has a better plan than what I have, you know, wants me to live by spiritual principles. I know that my God loves me today and is not judging me. You know, I used to think that things happened to me. You know, a couple years, and I still get programmed like that. You know, a couple years ago, I ended up in, this is when I was clean, I ended up in the hospital for asthma that I never knew I had before. Like, I was half dead when I walked into this place, and the doctor said, so how long have you had asthma? And I'm like, oh, about 10 hours. You know, and in the hospital, they said, we see, you know, they did CT scans and all this stuff, and there's a bat. I don't know, he left. I was told not to be scared of the bat, so I just thought I'd react differently than I would have before. Anyway, where was I? CT scan. Anyway, they saw a mass on my breast, and ended up being a tumor that I had to have removed. You know, and at first it was like, why is this happening to me? Am I being punished for all the crazy, sleazy things I did? And it was like, and I got an answer. It was like, no, it happens because it happens to everybody. And actually, I come to believe now that that asthma was a blessing in disguise, because I would have never known I had a tumor. Because at the time, I wasn't taking care of myself. I thought I was invincible, that I didn't need health insurance, blah, blah, blah. And that was a different reaction. I learned to react differently. Plus, I finished my fourth step when I was in the hospital. I had been sitting on that for months. But anyway, I think my time is about up, because John said so. No, that's all right. I get into this because this program has saved my life. It has changed me to be a different person. You know, that pastor that inspired me, you know, a couple months ago, I'm eating breakfast with him, and he's like, do you remember how you were 4 years ago? And honestly, I don't, but I know you people do. I know people can see the change in me. I know I'm living a happier life. I get excited about this program because we do recover. There's proof all over the place. From 34 years down to 24 hours, I can see everybody grow, and that's just amazing to me. There's people in this room, I've seen them when they came in, and they had, 24 hours, and they were white-knuckling it. And today, they're, part of my support group. And one last thing I want to leave you. If I offended anyone by swearing, I like this little ditty. New spiritual awakening I had lately. I always said that my God swears. At first I was like, because, I just wanted to justify. But a few weeks ago, a few months ago, I don't know, my time frame sucks. I was on the verge of using. And I came out to my car in the morning to go to work, and I actually got up early. I don't know, because I was going to take a drive. Who knows where I would end up? And there was a little note on my bumper, on my windshield wiper, that said, smile, fucker, somebody loves you. And it was and I needed that. Because the last question I had that night before I went to sleep crying was, where's the love, man? Where's the love, God? And the next morning I got it. And when I found out who that person was that wrote it, I asked when he put it on the car, and he said, oh, I did in the meeting. You looked like you were having a bad day. And it made me realize that sometimes my obsessions, when I'm obsessing, I can't see what's right in front of me. So the moral of the story is, yes, my God swears. I have proof of that today, because God speaks through every one of you. And the second thing is, when I'm looking for answers, I can't be blind, because it might be right in front of me. Thank you for letting me share. God bless.
Back up for sharing. Next, I would like to introduce the second speaker, Cedric from Buffalo, New York, N.A.
Hello, everybody. I'm Addict Cedric. And thank you for sharing first. Really enjoyed it. And I want to thank this area for inviting me down. We really like it. My family, my wife and my son. I think this is our favorite thing to do in NA right now. Look forward to it. My wife is still, she's talking about next year, buying a tent. Yeah. She was really disappointed, and she wanted to get in a Harmony house, and so she's pouting, and she's usually for me some pull strings, She believes, her and my son think I'm a super guy, super dude. And so surrendered. I said, I talked to some guy. I don't know who that is. I need to look him up. I spoke to, I think, Joe a lot on the phone. And it was very nice. But no cabins over there, So we ended up in a nice cabinet. And so she was pouting and everything. And so we we had our own cabin. Nobody else came in there. So that was cool. And got the fire going, and I made a, got the hibachi going, some food, and we settled in. And she's been having a great time, but what happened was, never enough. She's sitting across this massive three-room tent. So it's like, yeah, next we're getting a tent, and, you know, go out to Coleman's and get all this camping supplies. And, you know, it went from the condos with the Harmony House to all the way roughing it, you see. And that's my wife. And that's how, I don't want to say addiction, but that's how she is. And so we really like it here, is my point. We really like it here. We live in the city, and it's, you know, just waiting for the real estate to change. I got a very nice house, but it's in the middle, you know, of the transition. And so we're holding on to it. And so we like to get out into the woods. This is a big difference from the city, you know. So I guess that was my warm-up, break the ice kind of thing. But that's how I'm feeling, very serene, very serene. And being treated very nice. And so that's the reciprocity, karma type of deal, you know, because I'm into that. I'm into trying to, without a motive, you know, be kind to someone, like the note on your car. Read into someone's spirit and saying, well, you know, what can I do? You know, can I help them? Can I poke fun at them? Make them smile, you see? Relax, you know, let loosen up kind of thing, you know, remember someone. All that counts, man. There's little stuff. I know it does for me. Because people see me and say, oh, I remember you. Because I'm all over NA. I've been involved in World Service, and I was a regional delegate, and just a lot of stuff that I had to travel with, you know. You know, courtesy to NA Service Tradition, you know. So it felt real good to come in and do selfless service without motive, purely wanting to serve. And then it's like, you know, you end up in California, you know, doing a special workshop for the World Service. They called you, and they know you, and you know you're willing. And it's like, wow, turned into something bigger than, just by being making the coffee. Who would ever thought? You know, just continuously being willing, you know. So this topic is great. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I've shared. I don't speak a whole lot. I'm more of the service part. Like I'm a regional chair now, and but I've studied this text a whole lot, and it's still fascinating. Because when I open this chapter, and I write with my literature, so it's easy to pull out, you know, in a schedule. You know, it's people who I've given schedules to at least twice that are here still in recovery. Well, I gave schedules to 10 years ago. You know, I ask for money for beer, and I give them a schedule. So I always keep schedules. If I can't do anything else or say anything, or I don't have all the answers, this is where you can find maybe some hope and some help. So I keep my basic tech, and I keep you know. And so maybe I could find a meeting, too, and get the help I need, too. But I looked in this chapter 8, we do recovery, and it's like it became fascinating again. I hadn't looked at it in a while. My home group, we do the step of the month. So we're doing the 8th month at Wuhan Y. And I was telling my sponsor about it the other day. And it's repetitious, and it really gets your mind wrapped around the step again. And I'm real kind of rigid, and you know, I have to practice my open-mindedness when people try to tell us how it works. You know, you didn't do the 8th step, so it's kind of like ask a question or something, you know? I wasn't allowed to try to share on the 8th step if I didn't do it, say, for instance. You know, like, what are you telling us? You know, you're going to hurt yourself or misinform or hurt somebody else, and, you know. So that's not our policy. I mean, our conscience, but that's the only thing that bothers me about it. You know, you sit through and say, well, I haven't done any stuff, but, and then they go on, it's like, I kind of sink my head down, but I got to listen. So I still get something out of it, you know. Active listening. Active listening. You know. And then the other thing is my sponsor told me about the most annoying person who I get closed-minded and don't want to hear them again, and that's who they're going to help me. And he told me that maybe 3 weeks ago. Well, he didn't tell me that. He shared it at his home group. My sponsor got 26 years clean. He chairs his home group, and, you know, and we're very close. I love him a whole lot. I can't call him. My phone is not working here, and it's awkward, you know. But he shared that, but I thought it was for me. I took it, and I used it, and I've been getting help. The people who annoy me, and like they've been sounding profound all of a sudden. Who's changed? Me. But, and that's part of the We Do Recover. But this chapter, I told my wife when I left out, I don't want to talk about me so much. Because this chapter says, we do recover, not me. And it talked about politics makes strange bedfellows. And that sounds awkward to me. I really didn't understand that phrase, you know. So it has the old saying goes, you know, but addiction makes us one of a kind. Then I look around this room, and I remember a meditation talked about, how could this group of, you know, misfits help me? I said, you guys was misfits and losers, and I really didn't belong here. That's how I came. You know, I'm looking around like, I had a big ego. I was all, you know, physically messed up, you know, ear infection, lung bronchitis, you know, I was poor health, you know, from using. And so, but addiction makes us one of a kind, you know, and it took a long time for me to really not just say that, but understand it. And it took experience, me staying and listening, identifying, not comparing, and so that's how it starts off, you know. And it's kind of like creative writing to me, you know. Although this is how it starts, you know, and it goes on to say, our personal stories may vary in individual pattern, but in the end, we all have the same thing in common. This is the disorder. We know well the two things that make up true addiction: obsession and compulsion. And that's what the point of it is. It's not, it's because in previous readings it said it doesn't matter who your connections were, what you use, sexual identity, creed, religion. And you know, I didn't really, you know, that sounds all good on the paper, man. It, you know, it just did. But I was different than you. I grew up in the projects. Across the street from the steel plant. I was breathing in shit before the EPA really regulated. Today I know, you know, that wasn't cool. Stuff like, you know, it wasn't fair. And so I looked at the differences. I went on the other side of the bridge to go shopping, and it was nice brick houses. I was like, well, you know, why don't we live over here, you know? I like it. This is nice. As a child, you know, just seeing the differences. So, you know, you obviously know the differences, you know, however they are. The guy is faster than you in sports or school. There's all kinds of differences. We can go on and on. And so it starts young. You know, as soon as we can see and experience. So you come here and say, we all the same. That's a whole new way of thinking, man. Yeah. Okay, you say, so you say. But it's the obsession and compulsion. You know, when I hear you people, when I hear us share, I almost said you people. I just want to say it different, subtle. When I hear us share, it's the same thing. Because I had to learn another way of thinking. It's empathy. It talks about it down here in this chapter, you know. And it was the empathy and the identification that made it be able to stay and not look at the differences and go back. You know, but this obsession is the fixed idea that makes us, takes us back time and time again to the particular drug or some substitute to recapture the ease and comfort we once knew. And that hurt, that makes me feel real. I feel a lot of feelings when I read that because I've done it so many times, you know. It says the takes us back, time and time again. That's the painful part, man. Time and time again, we go back. You know, when to our particular drug or some substitute to recapture the ease and comfort we once knew. And that's the tricky part because, you know, we talk about the ease and comfort. But it's something that we go back to, but we try to escape. It sounds like, you know, we go back to it, to the ease and comfort. You know, so I guess it was some form of that in there, but ultimately it was painful. Today is the donut. Diabetic. Recently, like maybe since December, I found out my mother's a baker, confection. You know, I have dessert every night after dinner all my life. That's all I know. The ease and comfort I want to know. I go to bed with cookies, cakes, pastries. You know? No dainties, you know? I read that somewhere in the Bible. I couldn't believe it. You know? It said something about some dainties. It's like a painful thing, man. It hurts you still. So, because I grew up in church too, man. I'm a church boy. I grew up in a pew of church, and it still didn't keep me from obsession and compulsion and addiction and using and harming myself and others. So I did identify, you know, and I'm glad this is a spiritual, not religious program, because it welcomes everybody here and it doesn't limit my help, you know. So it says, because of our physical sensitivity to drugs, we were completely in the grip of a destructive power greater than ourselves, you know. Completely in the grip of a destructive power greater than ourselves. That's also very riveting because it's something that wants to destroy me and I can't get out of it. You know, completely in the grip. And it's my physical sensitivity. I can't, it's like, because I tried. I tried to use Easy. I wanted to use a cigar. This guy right around today with the legs. You know, all I see is a cigar. It's like a reservation, you know. But I know I can't. And he's, you know, not breaking his end. You know, another addict showed me. I want to quit. I can't do it. Now I'm, see, because I need to hear the honest sharing. Because I think that it's like, I say, well, on my anniversary. Or I'll pick a day and I say, I'll just have a cigar, you know, and I'll put them down. That's not the truth. That's not the truth. It's my physical sensitivity. You know, once we pick it up, compulsion takes me right to it. Once having started the process with one fix, one pill, one drink, we cannot stop with our own power of will. Because of we can't do it. And that's been my experience. You know, I said, well, okay, I'm a diabetic. You say, you know, don't deny yourself. Have a little portion. I ain't got that. I mean, I did get off insulin. I was on insulin at first. You know, it scared me very, it shocked me. Because I was terribly sick and I didn't know what was the matter with me. You know, I try to eat well. I'm a vegetarian. I eat a lot of organic stuff. I work out a little bit, you know, I had two spinal surgeries, so I had to sit down. I gained weight, you know, and it kind of, maybe it was genetic too. I think, yeah, my mother told me after I told her, so yeah, my sister has your grandmother. I said, well, I never knew. That wouldn't have stopped it anyway, but I was kind of mad at my mother, like, why didn't you tell me? And she was the type of, my mother, she not was, but she used to call me and say, where are you? I'm on your porch. I got a cake for you. You know? Beautiful cake. Fancy. You know, she was, you know, this is her deal, you know. She makes the best. You know, she doesn't even advertise in people. She doesn't want the business. So she doesn't bring them anymore. But I can't stop with just a small portion, you know. And I realize that I try to pray and ask God to do it, you know. Or I only buy a little bit, because if I have a lot, I'll go back, you know. Especially because, like I said, I got off the insulin. I kind of regulated my numbers. Have been good, but lately they've been climbing a little bit, and I'm getting complacent. The disease is creeping up again, you know. So I want to jump a little bit, you know. And this is a new reading we have. Like, I was involved in World Service, like I said, when we adopted to have this for a reading, and I thought it was a good deal, because I see it all the time. You say, when at the end of the world, we can know our function as a human being. Either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? To seize the alternative, going to the best we can to the bitter end, jails, institution of death, or find a new way to live. And I do H&I, and I was talking to another gentleman about a friend of mine, and he was in N.A., He had the same disease I had before I realized it, diabetes. And he went blind, same age. His feet was terribly bad, and he was on dialysis. And he went on to the bitter end. And I said, yo, you're not supposed to have that. And I knew very little bit about the disease. Now I've read a lot, you know, because it's hitting me personally. This guy said, focus on yourself. Keep the focus. And he would enjoy his deal, you know. And so the thing is, what is it left to do? Go on to the bitter ends, best we can. Or either go on the best we can. It's like on my own. You know, doing the best I can with my information, with my willingness. And it's me. I was his friend, because he was kind of slow, and he didn't have a good face. Like, he wasn't no handsome man, but he was slow. But I love him. I treat him. I let him come in my house, and he had to run. And at the dances, my wife was his dance partner. So we treated him good. A lot of people wouldn't give him a ride. He wasn't popular and like that. But the point is, he had another friend, and he was missing. The guy was sick. And I knew he was in his place dead. He wasn't answering. It wasn't no mystery. But I wasn't willing to go over there. I didn't want to face that. So the other guy did. And the thing is, I'm diabetic, and the other guy, when to find him, is diabetic. And we have the lowest numbers of anybody I know in our local fellowship who, because one died. For us to see the destruction of, if you don't keep your recovery first, you know. So it's jails, institution of death from using, you know. And I'm talking about, this is not a medical seminar, but the point is, I'm talking about disease. Unaddressed disease is unaddressed disease, and it's going to be the same. Jails, institutions, or death. You know, this guy died. He was going to an institution for change his blood. You know, he had went blind. And it's terrible. So I drive through what's called, near my house, a few blocks away. You got the methadone clinic and the outpatient on this side, and the dealers on all through there. And I call it the valley. I shouldn't say it. Death Valley, like. Because the people, you know, they're not alive. Like, you know, our deal over here is alive and free, right? You're not alive and free. So I say the opposite, they're like dead. And I look at it and I see guys sitting there, long legs, and just all the horrors of addiction. And I say, this is, you know, like the bitter ends, man. Some of them are, you visited NA before, and it just, I can't wait to move, man. I mean, it's not like, it's close by, like if I go down Main Street, if I got to go downtown or something, I could take an alternate route, but sometimes I live closer that way, and maybe it's meant for me to see it, but it brings my heart down, you know. On my way here, we're going camping, you know, I'm a happy camper, I got my family, we're happy, joyous, and free, you know, and serene, and we're getting by, you know, I pay my bills, you know, on a comp check, you know, and still got extra, you know, we're meeting our deal. So I look and I see the bitter ends, it's just like terrible. And like I said, I do H&I, and I go and I see these members who come in and out, and they share so profound, and they know they can recite some of this stuff or mimic it. And I go right back on, I see them using, you know. So the bitter ends is just like, how far, and I know who my bitter ends were. I'm going to talk about it a little bit, that I relapsed, you know, and so I came to NA 1990, speed it up, and, you know, I juggled around and didn't really take it serious, and I compared. But then, you know, I had a year clean, and my wife was pregnant, and I took my son. My wife to have the baby, and she had a difficult pregnancy, and I told her I'd be right back, you know. But she stuck to going all the time, you know. And I used. I couldn't believe it. You know, I wasn't thinking about using. I wasn't feeling like using. So I experienced true powerlessness, that I ended up in a place, the insidiousness, where I used to use, and I put myself, going to buy a sandwich. The sandwich was in the car 2 days later. You know, I used for 2 days, and I woke up clean, and the same day they came into my house and said, you know, you're in there, you know, your car's there, you know, your phone unplugged, and you know, I'm barricading myself in, like, you know, I'm ashamed, terribly ashamed. I used, and I left my wife there all night. So my son was born, and I woke up clean that day. So his born day is my clean day. And so that was my bitter end, man. I don't mess around with this. No, I don't play with the relapse deal or recovery. We do recover, because ever since then, I've been a good NA boy. I take the suggestions, I do what I'm told. You know, I got the same home group I surrendered then. It was a Thursday, you know, and like I said, and they've been taking me around the whole country. I got the tattoo and a clean date, I'm all NA. And that's why, to go further, you say, the deal is that NA worked for me. I sat at a meeting. I didn't go to no other place, like, to get detox or anything like that. And whoever did that, that's cool, because my wife had to go through the whole gambit. Detox, rehab, halfway house, and all that stuff. And that's what worked for her. It's not my experience. I don't sign no tags at my jail slips. What do you call them? Court slips. I don't get involved in that. Somebody will sign it. I'm not. It's my personal deal. You know, and so, and maybe, because I got another guy in my home group too, I know I'm jumping around, because he made it through that also. So he signs them. And that's cool for him. But the thing is, NA worked for me, and I want to say, in the beginning, when I first came, it was a building that housed NAAA. And I just was going to a meeting. I didn't know the difference. I just wanted to go to a safe, clean place. But it was just a meeting. My brain wasn't clear enough to distinguish the difference. I thought it was all the same. And it talks about it here, and I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But I'm not an alcoholic, you know. I'm not. And say, this chapter was fascinating for me because it talked about the history of NA, and I didn't realize that. Again, we do recover, and it's talking about we as a fellowship, like I mentioned earlier. Like, this is working, and it talks about how it started. Obsession and compulsion, the addict, and today we're more fortunate, you know, and it's available to us all. There's a simple, non-spiritual religious program. I talked about that. That addiction brought me to the point of my complete powerlessness, useless, and surrender some 15 years ago. This is an addict's experience. There was no NA, but I found AA. See, my sponsor got 26 years clean. So this guy was going to AA, man. NA was obscure. Talk about it in another chapter. It was hard to find. It was on the West Coast, you know. So that's what they needed. We just got a stop guide. You talked about it. We had the sheet. I got the sheet. The sheets worked. But now in unity, I'm glad to hear it. I hear it a lot around here this weekend. The step guide is the unity and the uniformity, you know? I was kind of pissed. I didn't get my way at the World Service Conference when I suggested that we put numbers on it, because I put numbers on my deal. And then they didn't really, the executive director, Anthony, said, no, we don't mean it to be a comprehensive tech, you know, and I was saying, but I'm going to put the motion in again, because I like to say it's, you know, Step one, the step working guide, question 14, you know, why was that for you? And we can do that, and I believe that'll work for us. Because I still mark mine down in numbers when I go over with the guys. But, so, we evolved from AA being the, you know, exclusive deal with the 12 steps. Now we have Narcotic Anonymous. And I don't know how it is in your area, and maybe it's like that. The obscurity of Narcotic Anonymous being hit and miss, and you know, but I believe in one fellowship, one program, one sponsor, keeping it simple, you know. And so, but our identification was at the level of apparent symptoms, not the deeper level of emotions or feelings, where empathy becomes the healing therapy for all addicted. You know, we are unable to identify with the alcoholic. You know, it's not a symptom that I'm doing, you know. It's not just one particular substance is my problem, you know. And I hear people, and I used to probably say it too, yeah, well, when I drink, you know, it's like my start, you know, but I didn't know. You know, alcohol is a drug. You know, it was illegal at one point, but this is legislation. I'm just saying, you know, it was an illegal drug at one point. Now marijuana, that don't mean, you know, I got coma and I'm going to go get some weed, you know, because I think about it, you know, they got all kind of hydro shit, man, purple sticky stuff that triggered my mind, man. You know, I listen to rap music, I said, I need to turn that shit off. I'm thinking about smoking a joint now. They're glorifying that, you know. It happens. So I'm trying to say it don't matter because it's socially acceptable. You know, so, and it's not about one symptom, I mean, one substance. You know, the liquid drug, or, you know, I had 2 spinal surgeries, man. I could keep on getting, they could write me up. But the guy who did my surgery, he's in our support group. I'm blessed. He wouldn't give me no shit anyway. I mean, he would, but but you can find a doctor to write you scripts once you had a couple spinal surgeries. You can manufacture some pain and shit like that. So that's the same thing, you know. I'm an addict. I can't with some other addicts and some members of AA found faith in the program we formed in 1953. We know as Narcotic Anonymous. So it was like some of them said, "Yeah, y'all, you should call them the." What is it? Now I'm finding myself the odd addict or something like that. The odd alcoholic. Like, you know, they were different. You know? They weren't just, you know, they were using, you know, syringes and narcotics. trying to go to AA meetings, getting like just people saying I'm alcoholic. I'm, you know, just don't drink. And it was like, shit, I need more than that, man. You know, I ain't drinking like that. You know, it's like I'm using higher drugs and shit, you know. I say alcohol ain't hard, man. It's higher liquor, right? So I'm only saying, I want to watch everything I say, you know. And I'm not comparing or doing, I'm only going down this text about this history of we recover. You know, I ain't against NAA competition, whatever you need to do. You know, I go to church and I do all kind of stuff for my spiritual deal, man. You know what I'm saying? You can call me and talk to me on the phone. You know, I got a sponsor, he kind of on how he said, man, you're doing everything but levitating. You know, I got the, you know, the incense going and, you know, the music and what I need to do, you know, in my zone, you know, if it's just a campfire. And I focus on the fire, you know. I got the fire pit at my house, you know, I sit in my yard. Whatever gets you there. So I'm not, we talk about me in this tech here, you know. Art's a friend of mine. He lives around here, and sometimes, you know, and they're still growing. Sometimes there is a mixed message. You know, you got the alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. You know, you got that. And people have to grow, just like individuals, areas, and everything else has room to grow. And it ain't about bashing nobody for where they are. And that's not what I'm trying to do. So enough apologizing. But this way was principally needed to prove in his passing years a language of recognition and belief, which we call empathy. And I never had it. You know, I was the type of guy that, you know, competition was the deal. You know, I didn't have any feelings for anybody. You know, I couldn't get in touch with your pain at all. Never thought you're supposed to. Anyway, you know, it's nothing to do with me. You know, it's like stuck over you, and if your stuff fell, you dropped your candy, your kid, it's, you know, it's on you, you know what I mean? I'm not. So, and so empathy was a whole other thing that, on the other part, it's a double-edged sword because I had to regulate that, man, from doing above and beyond sponsorship and carrying refrigerators for people and giving them money and, you know, trying to, you know, save them all. When I found this thing, my heart thawed and I found empathy for another addict. And wanted to do, like, more than I was supposed to. But that was one of the things, I don't know if they don't have that there, but they talk about it so many times that empathy was one of the things that we found here in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I don't remember going, when I went to Alcoholics Anonymous and I grew and made a choice that, but I remember this couple of guys' faces clear as day that helped me and got in my face. And they were old, hard guys who were serious about recovery. Let me not leave that out. And that's why these guys helped us in the past to start our own deal. You know, because they were serious about recovery. And they definitely have a proven plan. But it's, I think it's a broader perspective. It's all inclusive. So, even with the donuts, I call my sponsor, say, yo, man, I want to, whatever I'm using, whatever, you know, taking me there. So, we believe that this is different from all other methods tried by those in society. Long withdrawals from society, you know, is not recommended here. We felt that the sooner the addict faces problem in everyday living, that was faster that we become real productive citizens. And I believe that, man. I mean, you know, and that's my experience. I'm not putting anybody down. I'm quoting this thing. That's my deal. Hiding out in long-term places don't really do it. You talk about eventually we have to stand on our own 2 feet. And this... and fights life on his own terms. Why not from the very start? And that was my experience. You know, so that's what we kind of recommend. But a lot of people get completely lost. Some stayed and some, you know, came back after they stepped back or they relapsed. Some of the things that felt hard to hear out of this text and I identify with was our old ideas was got us into trouble. We could not deal with success, so failure became a new way of life and recovery, a new way of life. You know, and in recovery, failures are temporary setbacks, you know, rather than a link in an unbreakable chain, you know. I don't want to say that I sabotaged things and I made it go wrong and I walked away from jobs and career and school and, you know, a gentleman asked me, what do I do? And I said, I'm not real smart. I'm highly intelligent, though. You know, I could have been, this is like a, I could have been Johnny Carson, man. You know, I love the law. I love to read. I love to debate about it. You know, the different perspectives on it. I could, you know, I'm 45. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to do the hard work. But I would have loved in a different life if addiction didn't rob me to, you know, done something like that. That's a regret I have. You know, that's what addiction robs us, you know. We talk about when the addict works the program, lost dream, awakening, new possibilities arise. My new possibility is my boy. He goes to the good school. Still in my neighborhood. See, I'm right on the cusp. You know, it's like a high-end private school, man. You know what I'm saying? It's for the nerds. It's, you know, high-end. It's going to be an Ivy League. The college is going to be an Ivy League soon. And he'll probably go. So the lost dream of waking is through my boy. Chess team, golf, you know, he's different from me. I showed him the projects I grew up in, and he looked like he was looking at a penitentiary, man. Because, like, you know, the bricks and, you know, and the uniformity. Yeah, okay. You lived here because you live in a nice house. He doesn't know anything about that. So, I talked about our best ideas. We don't have all the answers and all the solutions, but we can learn to live without drugs. So, Narcotic Anonymous is not the last place. It's the only place that worked for me. We have the corner of the market on spiritual growth or recovery. You know, that's only my experience. There's no model of recovering addict, you know. A lot of people try to put me on a pedestal because of, like a big fish in a small pond. You know, I live in a small city, you know, small town, so to speak. Buffalo is not really big. And from the accomplishments that I've done in the service, that people try to, you know, and I am informed, but they run to me, and it's like, no, I'm a regular, you know. No, the information is available to us all. It's right here. You know, you can order this, any of this information. You can call. Anybody can call on the back of our IPs and call the World Service Office to ask a question or get the guy at the local service or any booklet they sell or go online, NA.org. It's just not an exclusive deal to anybody, you know. And you can get this step guide on CD. You don't have to read if you you have trouble reading, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know, there's no model of a recovering addict, man. And don't put anybody up there, your sponsor or anybody. We all anonymity makes us equal to recover and make mistakes and grow and learn at any different, at the same as anybody else. There's nobody bigger or less than. Even if you're feeling less than, or you know, somebody appears and acts like they're bigger than. They're not. It's only an illusion. You know, anybody can get a tumor. You know what I'm saying? Surgeries. I never thought I'd come in like this and have this. You know, and we can recover and have marriages and careers and serenity or whatever else. That's the anonymity. So we do recover. I definitely have recovered. I've changed. I'm a changed man. You know, nobody has to tell me that. I look in the mirror and see the miracle. My life is totally different than that. And my talk about a personality change is what I really needed. I was appalled by that. I said, what the F my personality to change for? You know, like, what are we talking about here? But it's my personality. And it's fantastic, man. I had a great weekend. I love everybody here. I heard a lot. And everybody I heard speak here, because I'm very critical and I have a very acute ear for this stuff. I really do. They spoke recovery, man. They talked about the literature. And not that I want to be nice about saying it. I didn't downplay it, but it still surprises me and it refreshes me, I want to say. Not that I didn't expect it, but it was refreshing. Because you can go to conventions and places, man, and you might hear anything, man. You know, you give somebody a mic, a podium, not necessarily they have a recovery to give. So, I'm not a dynamic speaker or, you know, I try to be informative and just share, you know, what God put on my heart. And hopefully, you know, we get a different perspective or better perspective or, you know, just a new way to look at this. We do recover and check out the chapter and see what we're doing here and where we came from and the hard work that our predecessors, addicts, put this stuff together. By addicts, for addicts, about recovery, you know. So we put some beautiful work here inspired by God. And I'm glad to, you know, just be a part of it. And, all right, I want to say special thanks to you, man. Art used to be my sponsor, and he gave me the same answer. I give him and I come to him always excited, and Art, and this, and they're doing this. And he said, there's a great freedom allowing people to be wrong. Same answer. He always gave me. Gave it to me today. Same answer. I don't have to be right. It said in the 10th step. Just because I'm right, I'd be wrong in my self-righteousness. You see? But living it is, you know, the message is meaningless unless we live it. You know, I can quote and go through this deal, you know, and razzle dazzle you with it, you know. So, but it's the living it. It's the simplicity of it. So I love you, Art, man. You was a dynamic force in my life. You know, sponsorship is the cornerstone and the heart of this program. So, you know, sponsor sick dude like me, you know. You know, you, God have you definitely doing some work. So I love everybody here. I know I went a long time. But, you know, I'm excited. And I thank you guys for sitting in through this. And thanks for letting me share.